Okay, the choice of the name of my talk is in fact a little bit different. It's just because I knew that champagne was coming. And I have this strange competition of who gets the most ridiculous names for talks. So during a certain time, champagne had a talk named My Multiple Personalities or something like this. Then I came back with Why I Like Dust, or I Used to Be a Housewife, Then I Drift. So I knew that she was coming, so I had to prepare something special for her. So, I used to be a housewife. Oh, hers? Yeah. Oh. So anyway, so I'm going to talk about, what I consider to be maybe my holy grail. That is, as everybody knows, CMB polarization. And basically, I would like to start to talk about why I think CMB polarization is important. Then show some movies that you can see all those parameters, how they change, for all the parameters, how CMB polarization change. Then talk about the polar and peak results and give maybe an overview with some view graph with all the experiments. So let's start where I think that CMB polarization is important for two reasons. First, that you can use the measurements to get a better parameter estimation. So because you have a bunch of degenerescence between the parameters that can be break it down. And another thing is, by itself, it offers an independent test for the standard model. But before I go to show movies so that I can talk a little more about those two points, I think maybe I could give some very brief introduction. So first, where the CMB comes from. So basically, CMB is induced via Thomson scattering that probably happens during the coupling or latent ionization. We expect that the level of polarization is somehow linked to the local quadrupole, but should not be anything that's bigger than 1 to 10% the amplitude of the temperature and isotropies. And there are other things interesting also, because during the talk, I'm going to keep talking about T's and E's and EB's, is that in astronomy, usually people talk about Q's and U's. And in CMB field, people now doesn't use the Q's and U's anymore. They make some transformation and use quantities that they call E and B. That the nice thing about E and B is that you don't need to keep a track about the system coordinates. That's interesting. So basically, polarization, the CMB could be now characterized by three quantities, T, temperature unpolarized, E and B. And of course, you start to have the crosses between those things. So E and B can be correlated with each other and with the temperature. By parity, usually people say that EB and TB are zero. TE, that's the cross that sometimes you're also going to find in my talk is named X, should be the highest signal, EE the smallest. And usually people say that you don't have a B signal, except if you have gravity waves, and also if you can have, for instance, foregrounds or lensing. And so let's go for some action now. So I prepared some polarization movies so you can have an idea how you can use polarization to break up those degenerescence that I was talking about. So what I basically did is I run the CMB fast, and I chose a certain number of parameters. And what I usually did is I fix all the other, suppose I go to show something about the baryons. So I fix everybody else according to what they call the concordance model that's best fitting for galaxies, CMB, Lyman Alpha Forest, and BB, Big Bang Nucleosynthesis that Xiaomin did it. And then I just make and this start to change the fraction of baryons. And for those interested, now some free advertisement, you can get those in my homepage. So basically, what happens with polarization when you change the baryon fraction? So you can see here, in black is the regular unpolarized component. In blue is the power spectrum of the E, and then the cross polarization. Basically, there is some things that always is going to happen in the polarization movies. That is, you don't have you have to remember that polarization only depends on Thomson scattering. So there is no gravity effects involved. And that's basically the main reason, I think, why you don't have power here, and here you have some stuff, because here's dominated by Sachs-Wolfe in temperature. So apart that, polarization has the same behavior as temperature, except that if you look very carefully, you have where you have peaks, as you increase the baryon fraction, in polarization you start to have valleys. And this basically happens because the temperature is going to depend on the fluctuation of the potential, while the polarization is going to be mainly dependent, but mainly dependent in the peculiar velocities. So when you take, when you start to introduce lots of baryons, you basically reduce the sound speed of the plasma. So then you start to have lower velocities. And then that's the reason, I think, why you make peaks in temperature and they go together with valleys in the polarization. The next thing we have is called dark matter. And basically, also again, the whole thing shifts to the left in the same fashion that happens for the temperature. So it's not like you are breaking in degenerescence or something like this here. Then suppose that you, in the place of having cold dark matter, you have hot dark matter, you have neutrinos. So basically, it's the most boring thing that can happen. So nothing basically changes. Lambda, or dark energy, the same behavior for polarization as you have for the temperature. But then now comes, again, something similar for curvature, right? As the curvature becomes the value of the omega k becomes positive, so a curvature gets negative, you see things in very, very small angles, I mean, geometrical thing. So then your whole spectrum moves to the right. And the same happens with polarization. Then you have scalar normalization. This is just a constant that you go up and down, boring. Now comes the new hypothesis of Hugh Lubin. So, so is what happens if you change the tensor normalization? So basically, in principle, you could use this because you start to detect B modes. Because if I do understand those papers, like Mark did, wrote papers, is you are going to gravity waves. They produce those B modes. So you can, in principle, and different models of inflation is going to produce different models of B modes. Different amounts, yeah? So you could use this in principle to constrain inflationary models. The only thing is, let's suppose you can survive for something like Fourier grounds, depending on this angular scale you're working with. And another thing, you have also a boost of the tensor part here in the very, very lower L's, but probably this is also ruled out because it means a very high, tilt in temperature. Scalar tilt also is just like multiplied by a slope, nothing changed. And then comes the second thing that you could use the polarization for, that's interesting. So besides the tensor normalization, also you could learn something about ionization from polarization. So basically, like you have in the temperature, the polarizer also get knocked down. So as the ionization increases, your information very, very low angular scales, they disappear. Something interesting happens that you start to like form, you get a little bit of a boost, in the lower multiples. You usually don't see that because you probably you have here lots of Sachs-Wolfe. You never see, if there is something like that in temperature, you just don't see it. So basically, you have polarization. You can use the polarization to try to break down those degenerescence that there was. Oh, great. Love that. Jesus Christ. Okay. That I was talking about. And maybe the two most interesting probably is to use polarization to have some idea about the tensor normalization, about the ionization. Now, let's go for something a little bit different. That is, I had a chance to work with data, doing some data analysis of two CMB experiments, the Princeton peak experiment that Bruce talked before. So what is good for me, because I don't need to repeat everything, so I can just jump through the conclusions, and then the polar experiment. So as Bruce said, peak is a ground-based experiment, was in the top of the Jedwin Hall. It had a bean of 0.2 degrees, so you can probe something like 600, L equals 600. And he operates at 9 and 40 gigahertz, so you have like Q, and you can do data in Q and U. And for comparison, this is the Saskatoon data, and PQB, this tiny ring here around the North Celestial Pole. Yeah, oh, I'm going to be faster than that. So in our case, what we did for peak analysis, so we try to get values from T, E, B, T, and T, B. We use what's called quadratic method. That's the same stuff that Eugene Max and Lloyd talks about. What we did is just to take 50 bands going to L equals 1,000. And our results we got, like for the temperature part, you got back, when you cross-correlate peak with Saskatoon, we got back the temperature of Saskatoon. Great, good test. And we also got values for upper limits that they match with Matt's results. And we present some other results for the cross, TE of 17, for TB 20. But we cannot say anything about TB at that point because we just had Q data. And now we are running the stuff with the U data also. So probably if you ask me more, 1 or 2 weeks, I can give you like maybe 4 or 5 microkelvin upper limit on that. And so you can have an idea for comparison. This is all known limits of E and X. I have here a compilation that was done by Josh Gunderson. And this is the temperature power spectrum. The E power spectrum, the one in Cian is the cross power spectrum, and those are like 4 models of tau from 0.1 to 0.4, and this is Matt's, that basically is like our upper limit also, and this is our comparing the black with the black curve, and the Cian for the cross with the Cian curve. Another experiment that I also had a chance to work with is the polar. Polar is also a ground-based, but that is in Wisconsin, and basically 7-degree beam, and was made in that way so you can use the DMR as your temperature template, and is basically a ring of declination 43 in this region that you can see against the Haslam map. Polar also, we use 3 bands, and you went until L equals 230 because you have a 7-degree beam. We come back, when we cross-correlate polar with the DMR 53.90 gigahertz, we get back something that's very close to the KMSPS of the COBE data. We get limits also very similar to the limits Brian showed before, the 10 and 80, or 8 microkelvin if you knock down the B modes. And then here we have upper limits for the cross T of 13 microkelvin, TB 11, and EB of 4 microkelvin. So this is basically the power spec that Chris is usually showing his thesis. And this for comparison, those are our limits. So if I get the Steve's limit here, that he say like 800 and somewhere around 2 or 3, he said 6 microkelvin or whatever, so he's going to be in some region here very close to detection, what is nice. That's a very good thing. In the process of doing all those data analysis, we discover a bunch of interesting things about in a data analysis. One of them is what we call leakage. Leakage, in a simple way of seeing, is like a contamination of one mode in another. So you have the E modes and you have B modes, and they get some contamination when you try to measure them. And of course, those guys, they also have a very interesting behavior. For instance, this is for boomerang, L equals 220. We notice always that E and B are symmetric. So if this is, for instance, the window function of E, and this is the contamination of B and E. And if I invert and print and get the B window function, I get exactly the same contamination for E. Another thing that we noticed from doing simulations was that also the leakage, he drops as you go out with very, very large Ls. So by the time we are from the 20 to L equals like maybe 70 or something like this, the leakage is almost completely gone. But this is because Boomerang is a 2D map and has very nice and some low noise. Another thing interesting is the shape. Okay. No, don't do that with me. I hate that. This is so substandard. This is the most substandard program I saw in my whole existence. The other thing is. Oh, yes. The other thing is the map shape, the shape of the map is important. For instance, suppose you have a circle like polar and peak, you really have problems about how to remove, you have some problems with leakage in Arduino functions. So, and it's always, because always the leakage is going to be somehow related with the smallest, well, next one. And another thing is, sensitivity is more important than sky coverage. So it's always more important to have a map that is like 2D than anything else. Other interesting things that we got from our analysis that, well, there is no leakage between TE and TE, what is nice. Usually we could expect that you have it. There is no leakage also, we can prove that there is no leakage between TE and TB, E and EB, and B and EB. And finally, there is this paper that we did with Ted, and Ted can give you all the details, that in the end, if you have a 2D map, you can find a way to knock down completely the leakage between E and B. It's basically that you assume that you have E modes and B modes and some kind of ambiguous modes, and what you do is you take the ambiguous modes to be zero, and you get pure E and pure B. So you get what you want with the price of throwing out a little bit of information. But this only work if you have like a 2D map. If you have something like a circle, this doesn't work. Or if you have, suppose you're doing an analysis like the data, like bounds, poster, that's not, it's not completely simple, right? You cannot do that. Another interesting thing is foregrounds. So foregrounds can be sometimes a problem, but I don't think that you can just, cry completely. So for comparison, I took all the foregrounds like synchrotron free, two types of dust, radio and infrared point sources, and then what you do is I used the five channels of map to clean them up. So basically, this is what they call the residual foregrounds. One thing that you have to be careful with this is that I choose the cleaning using map because I always think about polar and peak, and those guys are like 30 and 90 gigahertz. And they're going to explain why this is important. So this is what they call the optimistic scenario. So I have like maybe 5% polarization for some of the foregrounds. This is what it calls the middle-of-the-road scenario when you have something around 10% polarization. And this is probably what you get if you have a very pessimistic scenario. I'm talking about 20, 25% polarized. But I think you should not be guys like Boomerang guys and Polar Bear, if I understood. You guys are working like much higher frequencies than map. So at this point, you don't have synchrotron and all those things. You just have dust. You have polarized dust. So probably even the pessimistic scenario against some of those experiments is going to be lower. I don't think it's going to kill in detection. And another interesting thing is in preparing this polar map, the polar results, we got like things like Brown-Spolstra, and we try to understand. There is things published, I know, on that. But try to understand also the how those things in frequency behavior and in now and everything. And when you try to pull those results down to the microwave regime, you get somewhere some estimates for the foregrounds between what you call the optimistic in the middle of the road. So it doesn't seem to be that bad. And finally, my last transparency. But I noticed after Bruce's talk that's completely out of date, right? So I didn't include here peak and polar because I show separate transparencies on that. But Even I tried to make some changes as some people gave talks here. Yeah. Also, so this is basically at what I knew until today morning about all the experiments going on and separate by ground-based balloon and satellite. With this guy here, red dead. That was a LBL experiment that is dead. And probably maybe next time I can put the polar bear there. In the napkin. Okay, thank you.
Bruce put up with some foreground estimates, I can't remember who it was from a recent paper that seemed to be much more pessimistic than you're saying here. Would you like to say anything about that, Bruce?
Yeah.
These Italians.
Uh-huh. Aha!
Yeah, they had that polar was probably seeing or just about
to see Lysenkotron. I don't know. Because what I have to, what I showed to you is something that I use the map data to clean.
Oh, it was clean.
But I didn't show you the stuff we got
okay.
when you, This is just for comparison.
Okay.
It's just because map has frequencies that match with the two, in the extremes with polar and peak.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe
I'm also, you just correct me or it's wrong. Tell me.
Like HFI and LFI numbers.
Oh, those are old numbers, right?
No, I think it's a critical point there. 6.3 versus 63 and 74.
Oh, 63. So what are the right numbers?
Well, it's going to be around 6 microcalories.
Okay. Oh, 6, not 63. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not the problem.
Just post it on the ITP website. We'll refer them to you.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. I make enemies like this, right? Yeah, great. So more questions. You said 6, right? I never said anything different than that. Where did you see 63? I don't remember seeing it. Oh, did I fix right? Yes, okay. Oh, wait, HFI 2, okay, that's not the problem. Okay. Here also. Okay, I just put everything 6. Revise the future, yeah. The only thing I don't want is to make anybody upset with me.
Just put 0.
No, 0, no, because then you know that's a, yeah. That I go to big people upset. Yes, that's true. Yeah.